Hello everyone, and welcome to This Nintendo Life, episode 212. My name is NBZ, and it's 2022. We made it. We're alive still. The world still exists. The last couple of years, man, who the fuck knows what even happened, but it's all good going forward from here, right? That's what everyone's going to say. It's just, yeah. I've seen a lot of memes on Twitter, man, of people being like, it's end of 2019, and then snap, and like, Jesus, we're at the start of 2022. Like, that's been the kind of prevailing wisdom of like, last 2 years, is, some stuff's happened, but also, you know, not a lot has happened, so... Anyway, hi, I'm MBZ. I'm here today, joined by Bally. How's things going, Bally? How's your holiday period been? How are you feeling?
Very good, MBZ. Yeah, 2021 was just a weird blur. And, you know, if there's one thing this pandemic has brought is, like, I've played more video games than I've ever played before. I beat 49 games in 2021. And now it's not quite your 78, but it was... one of my best. I think I did slightly more in 2020, but not by a ton. So I was happy with that. And yeah, I might not be the same this year, but we'll see. And just, yeah, this one thing pandemic has meant, and being at home a lot more, is more time with games. And that is a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, you could say it's unhealthy on my part, but, you know, that's sometimes it just happens, you know, it's one of those things, right? Like, certain years you have games that, like, very long, that you put, like, hundreds of hours into, and this year was, like, I played a lot of shorter stuff, but also, like, a lot of kind of medium stuff. Like, I played a lot of 30-hour games this year, like, a significant number, and, you know, it takes a good amount of time, but also, I don't know, honestly, I don't know how I did that many. It's a little scary in some ways, but then I go on to Reset Era, like, they do the three every year of the 52 games in a year thread, which is where this whole thing started for me essentially. And there are some people I look through and they're like, yeah, I beat 160 games last year, and I'm like, fuck, what? How? I'm just like, how do you even, like, I calculated last 2 years combined I've beaten 142 so far. If you go from the end of 2019 to now, having done those last 2 years, it's a lot, maybe too much, as people might say. But
it's weird because I, for example, in 2021 I felt like I didn't play much Switch, and then the Switch gave you like your stats for the year, and it turned out I played like 155 hours or something of Switch, and it's like, wow, I didn't think I'd play that much.
Kind of adds up, doesn't it? Yeah, and you don't really feel like it does. Yeah, and I mean, part of it is also like, this is my first full year with a job in the games industry where my job is also kind of to know a lot about games coming out, so maybe that's a reflection.
But your number isn't counting the ton of stuff that you're experiencing with your job that
a bunch of builds, early game builds during the workday.
So your gameplay time is actually even higher.
Yeah, probably is a lot higher. But yeah, it's a lot of demos and stuff. But yeah, anyway, hello, we're here. We're here to talk about video games and stuff. Did you play much over the holiday period, Bally? Had a good time to dig into some games?
Yeah, it was good. I'm on my fourth game this holiday. I go back on Wednesday the 5th. So nice, I've got a few more days to play another game or two, hopefully. And just, yeah, really been playing a lot of Halo, a lot of Forza, a lot of a game I'm about to talk about, but it's been good. What about you?
Yeah, I've been digging into things. I was trying to finish things off. I finished up Yakuza 5, which I think I've been playing since July. Just been going very slowly through it, but like, I was like, look, I'm just going to push through and finish this. And ended up being a 50-hour game in total at the end of the day. So yeah, I was a lot of stuff there. I played through Inscription that everyone was chatting about. That was real cool. And I'd just been hitting some stuff up. Mainly, I was playing through Guardians of the Galaxy, which I adored and thought was fantastic. But yeah, we'll talk about a bunch of different games today. And we'll have some other stuff to talk about too. But Bally, do you want to tell the fine folks at home what today's show will entail?
Today's going to be a two-segment show. For the first segment, we're going to talk about the games that we have been playing, and then for the second segment, we've got our predictions for 2022. We're also going to go through our predictions from 2021 and see how many we got, if any, correct.
Yeah.
Which I don't think was many, but we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. It's always a fun thing to do. Obviously Nintendo, the hardest, most impossible company to predict in the universe, which always makes this fun, right? Because like, there are patterns you can observe, and there are things you can say, this seems like a Nintendo like decision, by which I mean just weird and baffling and out of nowhere. Sometimes things that sound outlandish, Nintendo does stuff that's even more outlandish. So I think that we'll have some fun things to say. But let's get into the video games we have been playing. And something that I was picking away at on my Switch for a long while, that you played last year,
but
I just got to finish, is Part-Time UFO, which is a cool little game from HAL, the creators of Kirby, of course, and also Box Boy. There are Box Boy references in this game with like costumes and stuff like that. And it originally came out on phones. It came out on mobile, and it was it's a game where you play this little UFO catcher guy who goes around levels solving puzzles by picking things up and putting them places. And I think one of the things I really like about this game is the variety of stuff that you do. You know, there's a level where you're in a circus and there's an elephant that's like balancing on a unicycle and it's like holding a pole, and then there are these hamsters on the side, and the game is like, can you get 10 hamsters to balance on this elephant? Like, very kind of goofy, off the wall type of objectives that you have to do, and it continues to do that, right? It's like, here are a bunch of cheerleaders, stack them up to a certain height and make sure they don't fall over.
That one just felt weird, the cheerleader.
Yeah, that did feel kind of strange. There's like, you build a robot at one point, like you kind of get Tetris blocks together, like you make a temple and all these different scenarios. And I think at a base level the game is really cool, and like it has these puzzles that are not too difficult to figure out, but I think part of the meat of the game is doing the extra challenges that the game has for you. And so every level you have kind of 3 medals you can get from doing stuff that's a bit trickier, a bit more hard to pull off or even figure out.
Did you aim for all the medals?
I did at the beginning. And then the first, like, while I was playing through it, I was kind of, I think part of the reason I was going at a slow pace was because I was doing every medal and I was like, okay, this took me a while, and I would put it down and I'd do like 1 or 2 levels and then put it down again. And at the end of the year, I was like, I just kind of want to finish it. So I didn't end up going for all the medals. If there was one that I thought I could get, I did. Mm-hmm. But otherwise I was like, I don't know if I actually kind of need to do these, because they tend to get quite samey at a point, or like a lot of them are quite similar of things you have to do. And that, I will say, there's a little bit of finickiness I found in the control of like, okay, so you're picking this thing up, sometimes your claw will flash, which means that it's like it's hit an object and it can't grab onto it, like it almost collides with another part of the environment, and then it flashes in a way that means you can't actually pick this thing up. And sometimes that gets clunky, of something is in this tiny corner, but because it's in a corner, it's hard for you to get your grabber to like hook onto it and get it into the air. So I do think there are like little parts of annoying, just part of the game as it is, that made me like a little frustrated with doing some of those extra things, which is why I think I just kind of decided not to. But yeah, as a package, it's really charming and has a lot of like delightful different scenarios, like the kind of weird, wacky things that you end up doing, but has like that satisfaction of, you know, when you have got everyone on the pedestal and they're all lined up, you have this kind of like 5 seconds of like, okay, this needs to stay still and not fall over for the next 5 seconds. So there's almost this anticipation, especially if one thing starts like rolling off the side, you're like, oh no, just please stay there for like 2 more seconds and then it'll be done. It's a nice concept that I think is, you know, well explored in a lot of different ways, and there are a lot of different like objectives that they give you that make the game have variety in a way that it could have gotten stale, I think, right? Like there's a level where you have to fish in the water, and so a bunch of fish pop up and like you get more points for a variety of different fish that you catch. I think there's one at a sushi bar, or like a where food like goes on a kind of carousel,
stacking like a salad, and
yes,
you know, there's a bell you can push to say when you're done with the salad, and they specifically put the bell between you picking up the vegetables and the plate, and it's very easy to accidentally hit the bell.
That's true.
And send in the order too early and you fail the level, which very funny stuff.
It's really cute, and I like the music as well. It's got this theme that It like repeated in a lot of different styles.
It's just remixed like 12 different times in different ways. Yeah,
it does have that, which is really cool. So I finished it and I thought, okay, that was cool. I didn't, because I hadn't spent that much time like going through the end, I was like, let's have a look at what else is in here. And so there's this challenge mode that you unlock at the end of the game that is almost like an adventure style thing, but it also is almost a roguelike in a way, because so you go into this kind of volcano area and you have a certain number of lives. You have like a health pool, essentially. Like if your guy gets hit, you take damage, and that happens in certain levels as well. Like you'll take damage, and some of the medals you have to get are based on don't take any damage and stuff like that. But it's like, okay, you can pick up this thing and you can smash it into the ground and it will explode these boulders. And then you go deeper into the volcano. You need to pick up these three keys, take the three keys to the portal, and it will open up a door to the next room. And in the next room, you have another puzzle that you go through, and you have to get those three keys to this next room. And it feels almost like going through a kind of dungeon crawling roguelike where you are progressing through these levels, but if you die, you go all the way back to the beginning again. And so it's a roguelike in the sense of, like, you just have a limited number of lives. I guess it's not really a roguelike because you're not, like, really gaining anything or, like, doing anything different as you go through. It's always the same level, so it doesn't change. There's no procedural generation there. It's just a case of, can you survive through this gauntlet, almost? And it's, I think the idea is really cool, and I would have put a lot more time into it had I not had the level or the life limit. When you know, have spent so long, like, carefully, and this game is a lot about being careful and delicate with objects, and, like, if something is swinging really wildly, I often would try and stay still to calm it down so I could place it nicely so that it was, like, perfect and didn't have any issues. And if you're trying to do that and be slow and perfect and then you just accidentally die, it feels bad because then you go all the way back to the beginning and you're like, well, I don't want to go through this thingamajig again. So I like the idea, and I'm happy that they added, like, extra stuff. There's also, like, a whole, like, tower mini game where you have to stack people on top of each other to get, like, the highest level, like, meters wise. It almost reminds me of Mount Your Friends, that game where it was a multiplayer game where you all have to, like, climb this tower together and just try and get to the top. It's kind of that in a mini game form, and it's cool, but I found that also a little bit frustrating. So I think there are, like, cool side elements to this. The core of the game itself is really good, and I think it's a worthwhile pickup on Switch. Obviously, it was originally made with phones in mind in terms of control and everything, but it maps very nicely. You know, it feels like a traditional game. You just use the analog stick to move around and one of the buttons to put your grabber down and grab things and move them to places. And yeah, just very chill, fun Christmas game, something to play, as I always say, while people are watching television. Yeah, it was,
I want to see more little cute HAL games. They're just, for sure, great. Yeah, like, it's just so nice. I it's a very different game to Box Boy, but I really got carried away with this game. I went for, like, every single medal over the summer, played it in a short space of time, really loved it. And yeah, the physics engine is weird, but I think it kind of works for the game, and I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, it's a really cool idea, and I think it's one of those interesting ones where I don't know if this would have been a Switch eShop game had it not been a mobile game initially, just from the sense of, I don't think Nintendo's studios are making smaller eShop games in the same way they were doing a little bit of, not a lot, but a little bit of on 3DS, right, where you had Intelligent Systems making Pushmo and you had HAL making stuff like Box Boy. It just doesn't seem like those studios are interested in doing smaller games in that same way on Switch.
Yeah. I mean, in 2021, if they made those games like Pushmo and Box Boy, they probably would come out on mobile, to be honest.
That's true. And then
also come to Switch. So maybe that could be something they keep doing, as they do mobile releases that come to Switch or release them at the same time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's definitely a potential way to do it. I just think it's, from a resource standpoint, I would like them to, you know, have these smaller teams making these weirder, more experimental games, because I think they have just some of the more interesting stuff that you know, you just don't see otherwise from other studios. So yeah, really enjoyed this part-time UFO. Check it out, it's on Switch. It's real fun time. Really nice artwork as well. I thought it was very pretty game. Has just really bright and colorful and nice to look at. So yeah. Bally, you have been playing something that also is very nice to look at, a beautiful game, in fact.
Ridiculously nice to look at. Yeah. I've been playing the game Grease. So this little game came out initially, I think this article says it was like December 13th, your birthday.
It was, yeah.
In 2018.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So don't come out that time if you want to be, like, in big game of the year discussions, because I don't remember this game being talked about a ton in terms of, like, GOTY that year, or maybe it, like, got knocked on.
Yeah, I think people were chatting about it, but it is hard when you come out at the right at the tail end of a year.
Because, yeah, not ideal. Know. And then yeah, it came to Switch. It actually launched on Switch, I think, on that date. So yeah,
right,
and
then yeah.
PS4 later. But yes, but by a Spanish developer called Nomada Studio, but then is obviously published by Devolver.
Right.
And it's
and I believe that's why it's Greece, because it's not French, so it's not gris, like the French would like not pronounce the S. I think in Spanish it means grey, and so it's Greece, the S is pronounced, which is, there's a lot of conversation about how you say this game's name when it came out, so.
We'll go with Greece, and yeah, grey, the word grey references the fact that in this game, you are basically running around the world getting colors back, like specific colors. So you will get the color red, and then the color green, and then the color blue, and then the world kind of evolves to incorporate these different colors. And it's just an absolutely gorgeous game. I should say, stunning, this is like a pseudo 2D platformer. Initially, it is very Journey-like. I would actually argue there's probably... I thought this game would be a very good candidate for, you know, here's a really pretty piece of art that you as a non-gamer should try. And by the end of the game, I don't think it fits that bill, where I actually think there is a...
It has a lot more mechanics than you expect, doesn't
there's
it?
There's a decent level of puzzle platforming in here, for sure. I'd even argue more than a game like Journey, for example. I think Journey's still the game I would probably suggest non-gamers try, although I know you've tried this experiment, MBZ, and it went badly, right?
So. Well, I mean, some of my friends at uni, I was like, this is like one of the greatest games of all time, and they're like, this is boring. just not into it. I think it is, like, you kind of have to approach it from a certain mindset. I think, like, those are the kind of people who are, like, playing Grand Theft Auto and FIFA, right? So, like, maybe not the right audience for some, like, Journey. But that said about Greece and, like, non-gamers, one of my favorite booktubers, who I watch a lot, she... this is one of her favorite games, and she like started doing a bit of a playthrough of it on her channel, and I was like, this is really cool to see someone not traditionally in the gaming space but is really into this from a narrative and like kind of theme perspective. And she was talking a lot about, you know, what it meant to her and stuff, and I do think that it is light enough mechanically that people who are not that into games can get into it and have it to be one of their favorite experiences. So I thought that was a cool thing about this.
And I think it is just unbelievably beautifully animated, this game. It's got this real painterly style to it, where the colors genuinely do look like ink, just kind of almost like watercolor into the world. And it's just this gorgeous animation combined with some really, it's got this overarching theme that keeps playing throughout. And then there's even like some Ori style chase sequences in there, and they're very, very on rails. You have very limited control in most of these sequences, but the animation of some of the things chasing you is incredible. And this is kind of things that I had no idea, based on watching trailers and little snippets of gameplay, I had no idea this kind of incredible chase sequence with the animation was in this game. And they were really like shocking points in the game. There's even one that was like a genuine jump scare. I don't know if you remember that one,
MBZ. Yeah, there's definitely like a creature, right, that kind of is persistent and prevalent throughout parts of the game, especially in the latter half, I believe. And there's definitely like real surprising elements and parts where you almost have like the central hub area that you keep coming back to that spokes off into different directions, where you go and collect all the colors, and then obviously that place gets more life and color by the time you get back to it at the end, right?
Is that the same place you keep returning to?
It is, sure? And it's, you kind of like go to different stairways and places to get to the other areas. I believe so, anyway. That's what I remember.
I thought it's a different hub each time. But anyway, I thought there were like lots of hubs, and every time you reach a hub, you need to essentially collect 3, 4, sometimes 5 little points of light, and you'll go off in a different direction and almost do like a mini puzzle platforming challenge to get each one. And there's some swimming in the game that feels very good, and like there's just some really fresh ideas. And I say fresh, a lot of these ideas I've seen before, honestly, in stuff like Mario games, I guess, and other games like that. And but doing them in this artistic 2D manner, and like there's this area, I think it's the second area, it's like this forest, and I think at the time you've unlocked red and green, and it's just so rich and vibrant, and some of the platforming challenges there were just very satisfying.
I love the animation on those trees that like disappear reappear. Stunning.
Yeah, there's like, I know that it's got this mechanic where, just like Mario Galaxy and a few games in around that time, you jump and that causes the platform to appear and disappear. So your timing jumps and that kind of thing. It's simple stuff, but it's
some upside down stuff as well, gravity upside stuff down. Later.
Yeah. It's very, very well done. And it's the whole package, the animation, the music, it's only like a short, maybe 3 to 4 hour game, but it's does so much in that time and doesn't overstay its welcome. It's even got like, so with these platform challenges, you can fall down. And I kind of would often test out the game of like, okay, but this isn't a traditional game where you fall down and die. There's no death in this game. It does kind of do, I guess, the reference we've done on this podcast is like the Warrior Land style where you fall down and you run around again. But what's cool about this game is I would fall down, I'd do this on purpose, like I said, a few times, and I'd fall down and then just to see what the animation looked like to get me back to where I was meant to be. Because basically what I mean is I'd fall down onto this surface, I'd run left, there'd be a gap, but then this spoke would just like wind itself out of the bridge, linking to where I was standing. Mm. And it's just like the level of detail to have this specific animation of a spoke in a level to get me back to where I was before that I might otherwise not have seen at all.
Right.
It's stuff like that that I love in games where you just that real attention to detail that is, you know, Nintendo levels of polish, arguably, you know, that it's just really, really, really well done. And yeah, I was incredibly impressed by Greece. And I've had it on my system a long time since it was on a sale a while back. And yeah, I've been meaning to get to it. And I'm so glad I have because it's just, it's up there with Journey. I don't know if it's beating Journey. It's certainly beating other games that maybe of that ilk that I've played. Not that any of them are coming to mind just now. What's the underwater one? Abzu.
Abzu. Yeah.
The Greece and Journey definitely worked for me a lot more than Abzu did personally. Mm. But yeah, just very cool. Would highly recommend.
Yeah, it's a game that has strong themes as well. Like, it's kind of a game about grief in a really interesting way. And obviously, a lot of these games you can kind of take from it what you want. It's not, there's no explicit storytelling or like dialogue or anything that happens. But I think it manages a really tough job of being able to. I think like part of the draw of this game for me is that it's very simple in its colors and shapes, and what I mean by that is like, okay, you're doing this stuff which is like bring these colors back, these very primary colors. And also part of the shock for me was like you turn into this big block as one of your first powers.
Yeah.
And your character herself is kind of like just very much a triangle. Like there are these very primary colors and shapes, but what the game does with those and the way that it twists them and like uses animation to create something so much more complex and deep, I thought was a really nice kind of mirror effect of, you know, you have this kind of almost outward looking version of the game that deals in these kind of more simple kind of objects and shapes and colors, but then the actual message of the game itself is saying a lot more. So yeah, I think it's a really, really special game, and I had it quite high on, I think I played it after it came out, so it was on my games of the year that didn't come out that year list, but I had it pretty high on there because I thought it was really excellent and beautiful experience, really, really fantastic.
I do like trying to start the year with a shorter, more impactful game. I know I did it with Brothers a while back at your house, MBZ, and this has definitely filled that slot really well. Like going to 22...
It sets you up nicely for a new year, doesn't it?
Yeah. Beat a new game. Really, like, impressed. Would highly recommend Greece. It's pretty cheap on the eShop. It does go on sale often. So, yeah, definitely don't miss it.
Lovely. Lovely stuff. The last thing we're going to talk about today is not a Nintendo game, but it's from a studio that has a lot of Nintendo history. Image and Form obviously made the SteamWorld games, and, you know, they'd started back on DSiWare with Tower Defense, and then Dig was kind of their first breakthrough hit, and then after that you had a bunch of different genres, you know, in the SteamWorld universe, with Heist being kind of a tactical 2D game that's, you know, almost... I guess I'm not sure, it's almost Worms adjacent is probably a good point for that. And then you have Quest, which is a kind of card based RPG, and they just recently announced Headhunter, I believe, which will be their first 3D SteamWorld game. But they have released their actual first 3D game, which is called The Gunk, a game that I think we were both interested in and thought looked cool and had this kind of
really almost, beautiful in trailers, like really enticing.
Has this Luigi's Mansion vibe of sucking stuff up, right? Which is definitely speaks to me. And I played through The Gunk. Came out, was on Game Pass, and I was just curious to see, okay, Image and Form, they've never made a 3D game before. Let's see how this goes. And it's probably their worst game, is what I'm going to say. And I don't think that's... I'm not going to come in here and say The Gunk is a bad game, because I don't think it is. It's maybe the most 6 out of 10 game I've ever played. And like when I think of... like what I put games on a scoreboard. I don't think like 6 out of 10 is like not worth playing necessarily.
But we play a lot of 8s and things like
that. Yeah, for sure. And I think like you could say it's a 7 arguably. I don't know. It's a game where I think they're really trying to find their feet with 3D game design, really, is what it feels like. It feels like, what if Kena wasn't quite as polished or impressive in a lot of ways? And Kena: Bridge of Spirits, obviously a game that came out earlier this year that jaw-droppingly good-looking. Last year, my Jesus Christ. I have to get used to the fact it's 2022. But that game, I enjoyed it, and I know you loved it a lot, and I think it's so impressive from a visual standpoint. And the Gunk almost feels like it's reaching for that. It feels like in the same vibe of almost a PS2 or GameCube platformer that is not, you know, of this era and is doing a lot of more simple stuff. Where that game was extremely polished, this one you can see the cracks in a lot more, right? There's, for example, like oftentimes you'll pick up these kind of buds that you throw into these kind of glowing holes that have like almost water in them, and they'll grow out of that and they'll create these platforms. And if you're too quick to jump on those platforms as they spawn, they just won't have a hitbox, so you'll just jump through the platform and just hit the ground, and you'll be like, I have to wait a couple of seconds for the hitbox to load on the leaf so I can jump onto it to get up a bit higher. Just little things like that, you know. I guess the core of the game is you're these two characters, you land on this alien planet, and you go off on an adventure to clear the world of this gunk, or to kind of figure out what you want to do here. And the gunk is just this roiling, kind of bubbly, kind of melty mess of a substance. It's very dark and kind of like, almost reminds me of bubble wrap paper to some degree. Like, it has that kind of very blotchy look to it that feels satisfying to suck up, right? And I say that's probably the best thing about this game is that gunk mechanic of going around using your kind of arm cannon to suck it away and clear out areas. And it does, speaking of Kena, it does the exact same thing of where you clear an area and it does like, oh, now the grass comes back and everything. It does the kind of like explosion of nature.
It's a great feeling in games.
It's really good. And obviously, like, it's just not quite there with it. It's like not the same. It doesn't have the same satisfaction because it's not quite as polished. But it still like achieves the same effect, I think, which is, oh, it's satisfying to hoover all this stuff up and get rid of it. Almost has a bit of a Metro Prime element where you're scanning things, and you actually get upgrades, or you get access to buy upgrades from scanning different objects. And one thing I really like that it does is if you have scanned something already, it will be in red, and if you haven't scanned it, it will be in blue. So it's very easy to keep track of, have I scanned this type of object before or have I not? I like that as just a very simple touch that sometimes games can get wrong, where it's like, oh, I don't know, I'm just scanning everything, but I don't know if I've scanned things or not. It's a good solution to it. And like, it's fundamentally not that complex when it comes to combat or enemies and stuff like that. A lot of the time you just have these like little dudes who run at you, and you suck them up, and then you shoot them out, and they pop and they're dead. They do have almost like Deku Baba like style plant things that shoot gunk at you, and in order to defeat them you have to get up close to them and like drag them from their stem. You like suck on their head and then like drag them out of the ground essentially, and they usually are quite far away and they're kind of like pinging you, and so you have to kind of get across the environment to get close into them to get rid of them. So those become a little bit annoying, but like the world looks nice, and generally like the puzzle solving is pretty simple. You get a shot that you can shoot for like opening doors and things like that you can also use in combat that isn't that necessary. A lot of it is just clearing out these areas, like a little bit of light narrative storytelling. Relationship between these characters is okay. You kind of find out more about the planet. There's like some aliens who live there, and there's a bit of story of the history of the world, and you know, it's nicely checkpointed in the fact that you can only upgrade at your base, but every time you enter a new area, you'll have an easy place to just warp to, so you can just warp back and then warp back to where you were. It's inoffensive is what I'll say about the gunk. Like, I think it's not super polished. It like has a bunch of issues in terms of like visual bugs and like things that are not quite there. I don't think it was as impressive to me. Just it felt like there was almost like a blur over the screen at some point, so it didn't pop quite as colorfully.
And their other games are so polished. Obviously they're not 3D, but like you're very used to like this level of polish with Image and Form.
Totally. Yeah.
Sounds it's lacking a little.
Yeah, and I do think that's because it really is their first big project like this, right? And to be honest, I actually like that they did this. I think it's a really smart move to, because because SteamWorld as a brand is so important to them, and I'm sure they want to protect it as much as possible and make it like the best it can possibly be, it makes sense to me that they went ahead and made this game first, because it gives them the experience with 3D game design and environments and all that sort of stuff.
Do you think they wanted that Game Pass deal on purpose to like keep this exclusive, keep it on Game Pass, have a practice 3D game, and then when they do something a bit more polished in 3D, they might return to the SteamWorld brand and also release it on Switch, you know?
Like, I think so, yeah. And I think, well, the tough thing about this is I don't think the Gunk would run very well on Switch.
Right.
It's tricky, and if SteamWorld Headhunter is a bigger game in that sense.
Do we know if that's on Switch, Headhunter?
I don't know if it's been confirmed for like platform-wise for anything at this point. So Thunderful, which is the name of the publisher, which is actually, it's Image and Form and Zoink game. So Image and Form and Zoink formed together to create a publisher between the two studios called Thunderful. And so Image and Form, I don't know if it's actually really exists anymore, although their logo is at the start of the Gunk still. So I guess they do exist as a quote-unquote developer underneath the publisher, which is Thunderful. And Brian Sigerson, who's the guy who's like in charge of Image and Form, I think he's like the head of the publisher, basically. So it's all kind of one big thing at this point, but yeah, I'm curious because basically they had a presentation. That's where this was announced. It was a Thunderful presentation of like games they are publishing, and it was the one last thing announcement. I don't think they had any platform announcements at the end of that trailer. Might have to go back and check it, but yeah, I'm curious to what that game will be. But I guess the point comes down to, they've had a practice run at this, made sense for them to put it on Game Pass. I'm sure Microsoft gave them a bunch of money to do that, which would have helped ease development costs and that type of thing. Obviously, the studio is successful and the publisher seems to be quite successful, so it doesn't seem like they're wanting for cash necessarily, but I think it was just a safe pair of hands for them to put this game out into and get people to check it out. I'm saying it's their worst game. I don't think, like, you know, if you like this style of game, which I think is very much for a Nintendo audience, which is a light platformy style game with some Luigi's Mansion and Metroid Prime elements to it, I think, you know, it sounds good for a lot of people, I think, and it's satisfying and
that's definitely what's appealing to me. But what you're saying, you're like, oh, maybe you don't need to try it, but it's only like 5 hours, right? It's not,
yeah, it's really short, which is another good thing for me. Like, it's only 4 to 5 hours long, and I don't think it outstays its welcome, which is nice. I think had it been 7 to 8, I would have probably given up on it earlier, I would say, because I think within the first, you know, 45 minutes to an hour, I knew exactly what the game was going to be, and I was like, yeah.
And it doesn't change from that point till
not drastically, no, not really. Like, you get some upgrades, but like they're very minor in the grand scheme of things, and not a lot of it changes a huge amount. So I think that it pitches its length perfectly. I think it has some decent voice acting and a cool world to explore and some fun mechanics. But yeah, I wouldn't say it is a must play game, but I think it's a really interesting project, and yeah, I just want to talk about it because I think Image and Form, one of our favorite studios, and I think they do some great work, and I'm interested to see now what they do with this new SteamWorld game and how it looks and whether it can live up to you know, their previous work. So yeah, cool stuff. Like the Gunk, it's neat. Check it out if you want. Cool, that is going to be us for the first segment of the show. Don't go anywhere, however, we will be back after the break to do some big 2022 Nintendo predictions. See you in a bit. All right, everyone, welcome back to the second part of today's show. It's time to get our heads on, our future glasses, look into the miasma of Nintendo's potentiality and tell you all the truth about what will happen in 2022 for Nintendo. It's a good fun time. Always impossible to do, but always fun. And
just like we told the truth for 2021.
Of course, yes. And now Bally is going to regale us with how correct we were about Nintendo in 2021. This is always fun for me because I never look at these again. And Bally just tells them to me on this show. And then I realize the terrible mistakes that I have made. So, yeah, let's kick things off, Bally, by actually taking a look back at the predictions we made for 2021 and see who did more right.
If
anyone got any right. You usually do me first, so go through yours first. I think,
okay, we'll do mine first. Right. I said the E3 organizers would push like hell to get the event to go ahead. However, Nintendo will announce early that they are not showing up with their booths. And in return, Nintendo were going to do a summer demo of Breath of the Wild 2. And then I predicted on top of that Breath of the Wild 2 would come spring 2022. So... E3 didn't go ahead in any shape or form, like physically.
Not physically.
So I don't think they even pushed that hard because of the state of COVID at the time.
Yes.
Is what I'm
yeah.
thinking. So yeah, all of mine's false. And yeah, Breath of the Wild 2 is definitely not coming out spring 2022.
No. Yeah. Okay, we don't even know the name of the game yet. Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of important.
Prediction number two. I don't think we hear a single thing about Metroid Prime 4 all year, and that will mean that the trilogy can finally come out on Switch. And then I sort of said Mario Galaxy had proven that Prime 3 would work fine with those controls.
Right. Well, you were right. They didn't talk about Metroid Prime 4 at all.
Nope.
However, no trilogy came out. And no also, trilogy. At this point, seems like the rumors are more Prime 1 remake than trilogy. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And number three, Switch Pro. Nintendo do a half-step console. And then I said I was generally struggling to work out how Nintendo didn't divide their market, because obviously Nintendo wouldn't have wanted to do that. So I thought they were going to go for more powerful online functionality, Breath of the Wild 2 to run at smooth 4K through DLSS.
Mm-hmm.
The added power would come from the dock. Frame rates weren't going to go above 30, and it would cover Nintendo's ass for about 2 to 3 years. And I said this autumn, alongside the launch of Mario Odyssey 2, is when the Switch Pro would come out, and it won't be a hugely hyped launch. It's a bit like the new 3DS. And I said, inspired by Sony, they will announce outside of E3, and the system won't be playable to journalists, just like the PS5 and Series X were, until like a few weeks before launch in the late autumn. What else have I said here? Any queries about will X game run well on Switch will be largely covered, that if you're running on Switch Pro docked, you will be fine for almost any game. That was
right,
my prediction.
Okay.
So, yeah. Switch OLED came out.
Even when you kind of like minimize it and be like, it's not going to be that important, Nintendo finds a way to still disappoint us, you know? still yes. find a way. So
yeah, so obviously there is that rumor that the power was taken out of the system due to a chip shortage. That's obviously not proven. And yeah, it's not powerful at all. It's the Switch OLED. It's got a very nice screen. And other than that, there's not really much new about it. Slight style change and, you know, the kickstand has improved.
Yes. Much better stand, much better bezel, more screen real estate. From what I've heard, people playing on that thing handheld, it's completely gorgeous. So... you know, I'm still kind of tempted. I was playing some Switch the other day, and my fan is fucked. It's just I hear it all the time in handheld mode.
All
like,
the time.
Yeah, it's real bad.
Because mine will be loud for the first 10, 15 minutes. So it's like it's clearing itself out, and then it runs slightly
quieter. I need to dust inside of that thing. I would use my fucking compressed air to go inside of that thing, maybe. That might be a good idea.
Yeah, but, you do risk it blowing it further in. I don't know, but yeah.
Yeah.
Things you can do. Okay, and then my number four prediction was random ass rabbit out the hat game of 2021 will be Pilot Wings, and I said it will also launch with the Nintendo Switch Pro. It's been 9 years since Pilot Wings Resort, and refreshingly, we will finally move away from Woohoo Island. The new land will showcase some of the extra oomph that the Switch Pro has to boot. Well, that all didn't happen, so yay.
Yeah.
My insane prediction was that Mario Kart 8 Deluxe would be on discount for more than 33%.
Didn't keep track if that ever happened, but I'm going to guess it didn't.
I'm pretty sure it didn't.
Yeah.
I said we've had Labo, Mario Kart, Live Circuit, Ring Fit Adventure, Nintendo will next throw at us Jump Rope Challenge 2. Build out a full game from the Jump Rope Challenge first game and comes with a small camera that makes the game augmented reality, a bit like iToy. And it will only be available until March the 31st, 2022.
Nice. So yeah, nice.
That didn't happen either.
No, it didn't.
I'm going to take a big fat zero.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you could give yourself like a half point for, them not talking about Metro Prime 4, but also like, I mean, that was pretty obvious, you know, like they weren't going to talk about it. You know, that's fine.
Okay. Cool. All right. MZ's predictions. Here we go. Number one. 35th anniversary of Zelda. It will be a direct that is a 35th anniversary direct specifically focusing on it.
Mm-hmm.
Three things announced. Number one, Link slash Zelda plus Rabbids. So that's going to be the sequel to Mario plus Rabbids you predicted. And you predicted there would be a Ganondorf Rabbit.
Okay.
Number two, Breath of the Wild Zelda D-Make demo. So you thought that the D-Make they told us about that they based Breath of the Wild off of to like help with development, you thought they'd actually release that as a game,
which you can actually see if you go and watch the GDC talks, you can see that in action. It's a really cool little thing, but
that's also another suggested limited time game, which was all the hype back then. Number three, there'll be a sequel to Link's crossbow training with Breath of the Wild Link. Now your bow will break.
Oh my god.
And you also said that there would be a collection of three games as part of a Zelda, like, you know, like 3D collection, Skyward just like Sword there was with Mario
and all that stuff. Pardon? Skyward Sword and Wind Waker and Twilight Princess, all that together.
Predicted Skyward Sword, Wind Waker, and Twilight Princess.
Yeah.
I think overall you get half a point for both a sequel to Rabbids coming. So it's not obviously not Zelda linked.
Yeah, it's just Mario plus Rabbids 2, but yes.
Yeah, and also it wasn't a collection, but Skyward Sword did come, and it was tied to the 35th anniversary. I don't think it didn't get an exclusive direct.
There was a direct. I think they talked about it as part of one of their directs, but I don't think they had a specific one. Mainly because it was very disappointing in terms of announcements for what they were going to do. Of course, they did another Game and Watch, which would have been an easy guess for a thing they were going to do. But
a shame. Did I say half a point?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay, we're half.
I'll take it.
Switch Pro is coming, you said. You said it will release in September. It actually came out in October. It will come with the following third-party games only on the Switch Pro. And you said they were going to be Assassin's Creed Valhalla, Resident Evil 2 Remake, Sekiro, and Metal Gear Solid 5. And you didn't actually have any specific thoughts on the specs, which is very unlike you, MBZ. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, Nintendo, you know, that who knows what they do, so not worth predicting what they're going to do.
Number three, you thought Xenoblade Chronicles 3 would be announced to come out this year.
It should, according to Imran Khan, it should have been announced last year. So
he's failed you. Number four, you said Fire Emblem would be announced to come out in summer 2022. It was going to be a remake of Fire Emblem 4, which will make Fire Emblem 4 fans unhappy because its engine would be in Three Houses. Mm. It will also be Bally's Game of the Year for 2022. I guess we'll still have to wait and see.
We'll have to wait and see. Prediction number three and number four, I could just say them again for this year, because I think they still are possible, you know.
Also, you said it will be a continuation of the Echoes remake series, so like that Echoes colon something, right?
If they do one of those, I do believe that they'll bring the Echoes name back, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
And then your slightly wilder prediction would be that Link's motorcycle racetrack, it'd be a follow-up to Mario Kart Home Circuit, and Zelda would ride on a Guardian with spider legs.
Nice.
I then suggested maybe you should just have Zelda riding a Guardian on spider legs in the next Mario Kart, and that could be like the next thing.
But yeah.
I think, are we half a point each on that?
Sure, yeah. Okay, we aim for the stars with these things that often don't get too close. I thought even my conservative prediction of Xenoblade 3 and Fire Emblem would be like, come on, announce those already. But I think both of those are kind of lock-ins for this year to be announced. So, yeah, I hope for it. Also, did I do my 2D Metroid will be announced as my blanket main statement?
If you
at the top.
I didn't write it down. No, I'm going to say not. You probably did do it because you have been fairly consistent.
I do it every year, man. It's every year.
And hey, it happened. It was announced and came out in the same year. It was
so good.
Wild.
Oh my god, fucking love it. Right. So good.
Do you want to start or shall I start? Are we going to start wild or safe?
Wild is the end. That's the end card.
Okay, but within my safe predictions, I have fruitier ones.
Okay, well, I'm going to start pretty safe. So I'll kick it off. Obviously, my first blanket announcement, the first time in the entirety of this show, a new 2D Metroid will not be announced. That's my blanket. That's my blanket statement. That's not one of my predictions. That's just that will happen. You know, they're not going to announce the year after they do one. They're not going to announce a new one. I'm just saying it. It'll happen. Although I wonder if they do DLC for Metroid Dread. That'd be fun. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
All right. My first actual prediction. So Nintendo will continue their drip feed release of N64 and Genesis games throughout the year, getting to the point where they have put out all the games that they promised initially, and then we'll get to September and they'll be like, okay guys, here we go, mind-breaking stuff, we're adding Game Boy and Game Boy Color, no Game Boy Advance, Game Boy and Game Boy Color to the Switch Online. That's it. That's all we're doing. And also, after that, we're not going to put out any more N64 games. That's it. That's all of them. No more for the rest of the lifespan. We're done. And alongside this, to like, you know, give a little more juice to that online service, to the expansion pack, they will add an expansion to the newly released Splatoon 3 that had come out already in 2022.
I like that bit.
There will be a Splatoon 3 expansion that is part of the expansion.
Is that a single-player campaign or is it something different?
I think it's a single-player add-on, I believe, is what it'll be. It could be... I could see the way Nintendo have acted with Animal Crossing and stuff like that, taking stuff like Salmon Run and not putting it in Splatoon 3 and then putting that as a separate mode, like a horde mode that's more built out Salmon Run version. I could see that being a possibility, but I think probably a single player, like maybe challenge thing or something along those lines, similar to what they did with the Splatoon 2 DLC, but this DLC will be part, of course, of the expansion pack. We'll buffer it, and we'll continue to not get Game Boy Advance games, and we will, again, Nintendo's drip feed will run out. There'll be no more Super Nintendo games, no more N64 games or Genesis games, and they'll just do...
What will those numbers cap off at?
Well, what ones have they announced? They've announced they're going to do Banjo-Kazooie, and they're going to do, like, remember when they...
I think they've already have 8, and there's 8 more coming, maybe?
Probably, The current cadence is 1 per month, so the ones they've already said are going to be coming are going to be over the next however many months until September, by which point they'll just turn the fucking spigot off, and then there won't be any more coming. We've seen this too many times, man. We've seen it, and every time everyone's like, you know what, Nintendo, they're going to give us the games we want, they're going to, you know, they'll get there in the end, and I'm just so done with this fucking company and what they do with their old games. They have clearly shown a pattern. They are not changing from that pattern, and it's gonna continue to be the case. We saw it on Wii U. Here's a new system for Wii U. We're putting Wii games on there now. Okay, here's like 10 anyway, bye. Oh, by the way, here are some N64 games. All right, we're done now, see you later. Always happens. They're like, here's a brand new system, and then they just stop supporting it. So I think that's definitely going to be the case with N64. Not that N64 has a ton of games anyway, but also they're probably going to cut it off before they put out stuff that people want, like, I don't know, fucking Jet Force Gemini and things like that, right? You know, I wouldn't be surprised. So
shall I roll that into my prediction because it kind of links?
Yeah, go for it.
So my prediction is like, what if they cut off N64 and it becomes limited, but then they go for a new system where they, I mean, that is part of your prediction with Game Boy Color. I'm going to say they're going to do Game Boy Advance, and they're going to skip the Game Boy, they're going to skip GameCube for now, whatever, it's going to jump to Game Boy Advance, and they're going to launch with 8 games, and one of those 8 games is going to be Mother 3. And I think, I think that now is finally the time. It creates hype around their Switch Online service. It still falls in line with like cutting off the other systems too early, like N64 and whatever. And yet, you're right. I think I agree. We'll have a very limited number of N64 games, and they'll say, okay, but on to the next thing. Here's GBA games, and they're going to have 8 games at launch, and those games will be Mother 3, Metroid Fusion, WarioWare, Mario Kart Super Circuit, F-Zero Maximum Velocity, Zelda Minish Cap, Fire Emblem 7, and Wario Land 4. Those are going to be the 8 games that they launch the Game Boy Advance part of expansion. And it's going to be on the expansion pack, I should say. It's going to be no additional cost. It's going to be on that expansion pack alongside N64.
Safe picks there, because I think most of those are ambassador games, which would make sense for what they usually
do. Most of them are, barring a couple, but yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So that's my prediction.
I love your prediction way more. It's more optimistic. It's one that I want to happen. I think that would be great. Like, I would love to have Game Boy Advance games on the Switch.
In reality, it'll be the expansion, and it'll cost an extra $20 a month on top, and it will be everything else that I've just said.
Oh, and also you'll have like an addendum £5 extra fee if you want to play Mother 3.
Yes. And you won't be able to buy Mother 3 standalone. It is very much only through this service.
And if you don't play it before March 31st, 2023, they'll remove it from the Switch Online service. I love how we just have to caveat all these things with Nintendo. It's like, look, we can get something good, but we always have to take two steps back. Always, every time. It's just necessary. So,
yes.
Good. Cool. I'll move on to my second prediction then. My prediction number two is that Masahiro Sakurai, the workhorse that he is, he needs a break. That man should take a break. He will not take a break. He will announce that his next project is in the works. And, shockingly, it will not be a Nintendo game. Sakurai having to do all these deals with these companies for Smash Brothers. He talked to Square Enix a lot, that man. You know, he had to get fucking Sora in the game and Cloud and Sephiroth, all these characters. He had to talk to Square Enix a whole lot. And as a result of that, he would have, made a bit of a business deal, some handshakes done. And he will be creating a new IP for Square Enix that will ship only on Xbox, PlayStation, and PC. I think this could be one where Sony try and get some kind of exclusivity on it, but I think Sakurai will be like, nah, I just want to be on everything, and has made a deal with Square Enix directly. So he will be creating a brand new IP. If I was to say a genre, I'm going to say action RPG is what he's going to go for, like something that fits the Square Enix vibe, but is like a little bit outside of their wheelhouse. And I think that is a possibility that this man... he has ties to Nintendo, but he fulfilled Iwata's last wish to do Smash Brothers, and now he's going to go somewhere else and do something else. Because theoretically, he's not tied to a platform, right? He does Nintendo stuff because that's who he's worked with for this whole time. Yeah. And if I'm realistic, probably he still would put the game on Nintendo platform, but I do think that he's going to work on something totally different.
We've seen this non-Nintendo game systems in his home like within Nintendo Direct.
That man loves it. He probably played more than 78 games last year. I wouldn't be surprised. Him on his fucking exercise bike, he probably beat more games than I did. Sakurai's a workhorse, man. He loves it. So he knows the industry very well. He has a column in Famitsu, I believe, every month where he writes about like stuff he's playing and his thoughts on the industry and stuff, which I always think is fascinating. And he is like, you can tell from Smash Brothers, he is like one of the biggest fans of the games industry that exists in the games industry. Because I think there's a lot of people out there who are in the games industry. They're so heads down in their own projects. They're just always working on their own stuff. They never get time to look at other stuff or play other stuff in the industry. Sakurai strikes me as one of those dudes who like just loves video games in every way and just like has a wide, crazy knowledge of them and just wants to make cool stuff.
I like action RPG as well. I think that fits his style and that fits Square Enix quite well. I think he could.
Yeah, it's almost like adjacent to what he did with Kid Icarus, which like has elements of that.
Yeah, I was gonna suggest that. Yeah,
yeah,
I like that. Yeah,
so yeah,
I like this prediction a lot. I would just delay it 1 year because that man needs a goddamn break.
He should. The reason I didn't is because I know like he will not. That's the thing.
That is true.
So maybe he won't announce it next year or this year, but it might be that he's already
also
working on something.
There'll be way too many butthurt Nintendo fans on the internet, which will be
insufferable. Oh, my goodness. But, so many people will be mad, and that's part of the
sort. That's
going
to be its own wave. I like it. Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to go for one of my very safe predictions.
Okay.
Safe-ish. 2022 will be another completely silent year for Metroid Prime 4.
Ooh, okay.
This will mean that the rumors for the HD remaster of Metroid Prime are true. And it is going to be the first game on Nintendo Switch in summer, as in like the first game in the Prime trilogy. And because it'll be widescreen for the first time. Not for the first time. I guess it's been widescreen on the other
I guess
port.
They did do that for the trilogy, right? Yeah. They will have widescreened them all, yeah.
But it's going to have that substantial HD glow up. And I actually think similar to Wind Waker HD, they'll iron out the collectathon at the end of the game and make it a leaner, better overall performance.
Yeah, that'd be great if they did that.
I also think this game is going to do gangbusters critically and it's going to do okay commercially. I actually think once that game's ironed out a few things, comes out in HD, people will still claim, God damn, Metroid Prime is a damn good game and it will do very well critically. That's my safe, boring prediction.
I think it works. I actually I think they might actually talk about Prime 4 this year. That's the one where I'm not sure that they'll be silent on it still. Because it, when you think about it, so they rebooted development the start of 2019. We're coming up on 3 years from that now. When we get to like February, March, that's 3 years of development on a game from Retro. And usually that's about the time where you might want to start talking about something. I don't think Prime 4 comes out an earliest end of 2023. Probably is the earliest I would say it comes out.
Yeah. I think it's going to have a 5-year cycle in that sense.
Potentially.
Like,
yeah.
So that's why I would think it's probably not going to be mentioned this year. But we'll
yeah,
see.
So I think that the reason this Metroid Prime like trilogy remaster / one remake or whatever has been as like delayed as it is because Nintendo do want to have a marketing beat with it leading up to Prime 4. Which to me reads as if they're going to do that this year, then Prime 4 is closer than we think it's going to be. Because they don't want to lose the momentum, right? If you put out a Prime 1 remake, you want it to be at least a year out from...
Well, here's my longer term prediction.
Okay.
Because I agree. I think keeping Metroid relevant is important.
Yeah.
2022, you get a Metroid Prime remaster. Or HD remake, whatever you want to call it. I think 2023, you get Mercury Steam... doing Super Metroid remake, and then I think Metroid Prime 4 comes out 2024.
So having a cadence between
them. So you
them.
Keep Metroid in people's minds. You're getting one Metroid game a year, for God's sake, and you're keeping Mercury Steam working or something. Maybe 2 years is too tight a turnaround for a game like Super Metroid remake, but then that gives them plenty of time to get Prime 4 out the door. I don't know.
I mean, they got that engine for Dread, right? Like, if they remake it in that engine, all the game design stuff is done, right? When you come to remakes, so it's less of that part of it.
Could you imagine that game engine with the atmosphere of Super Metroid if they actually got that right? That could be an incredible game.
It could be. I think a lot of people would be mad about it because people love the pixel art of the original, and I agree to some point, but I think the fluidity of Dread means that like it would be the best playing version of Super Metroid there's ever been.
By a very long way for sure.
And that I think would make it potentially the best Metroid. I still think a lot of people believe it is the best Metroid, but you know, feel is the one of the most important things for me and when it comes to that series, so I think it's lower on my list as a result of that. But you know, I could bump it up if it was remade in a beautiful way. Do you think that, given the blowback to Federation Force, do you think that they will attempt to do another spin-off as opposed to a remake of Super Metroid, or like have another game fill the gap? What if, you know, Prime Pinball 2, you know, coming back with a pinball could be an option.
I think they're probably pretty reticent to spin-offs, and I think Super Metroid Remake, even if it doesn't come out next year, is an open goal. Like, it's such a beloved game that I think it could do another. It's like Link's Awakening, you know, like it could be that kind of level of hype. Mm-hmm. And that game, I think, did very well for Nintendo. So I think that's a safer bet than, you know, Federation Force and Pinballs or some other spin-off. But we'll see. I'd always be up for a spin-off. I think that creativity is always really interesting. And, you know, there's some interesting characters and worlds that they've started including in a game like Dread that I think could be really cool. Like, what about a game that's just based on... I was going to say, just based on the Federation and based around Emmys or something. It's like, it's turning into Federation Force very quickly. But there is stuff they can do in that world that isn't just Samus going into the center of a planet or escaping the center of a planet.
They have a bunch of other bounty hunters, right? Like, they set that up from Hunters, and, you know, got Silux, who seems to be more...
And some of them appear in, like, Prime 3, and those games do a decent job of widening the universe.
I think so, yeah, for
but
sure.
I'd like to see more of that, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, maybe it's just because I'm playing a bunch of VR at the moment, but I've been thinking
a Metroid game in VR
would be pretty sick. I just played Vader Immortal, the first episode of that, and sci-fi worlds and just like looking out on spaces, and it just seems like a good fit. Obviously, Nintendo like has no method of VR unless you count Labo VR, which is a fun thing, and I think works pretty well for what it is. But I would love to see them do something like that. In Nintendo's infinite wisdom, like them adding the VR mode to Breath of the Wild and Mario Odyssey and stuff like that,
they'll add it to the Metroid Prime remake this year.
I would not be surprised, like, because you know they fucking added Bluetooth to Switch, and they, you know, they're just late to the party, and all they added online multiplayer to Mario Party out of nowhere. You know, like, they're not above going back to their old games and just randomly adding stuff in. I wouldn't be shocked if they're like, and there's a Labo VR update for Metroid Prime where you can go and look at the game in VR and play it in first person, and they will have not adjusted for motion sickness at all, and it'll be a nightmare. I cannot tell you a thing I have felt more sick at than playing Breath of the Wild in VR. Holy shit, I wanted to vom after like 30 seconds. It was that bad. Real rough, but hey, they were trying, at least. I don't know. All right, that was your number two, right?
That's my number two.
All right, my number three. So, Nintendo, talking about Late to the Party. Late to the Party, as always, will finally announce that themes and folders are coming to Switch in a new update. However, you will not be able to buy themes like on the 3DS eShop. There will, in fact, be 5 new themes. They will all be basic colors like red and blue and green with no other frills. The folders will also be limited to only 10 total, and you will only be able to label them with an individual letter to everyone's shock and surprise.
Like the Wii U.
Just like the Wii U, just like all these other fucking things. Everyone will initially be happy because they're like themes and folders, and then Nintendo will announce what the actual content is, and everyone will be like, this sucks, this is compromised on every front. So yeah, I wanted to give myself a bit of a win, but like add a inevitable Nintendo disappointment to it, which is... yeah, I don't know, man. I think the thing with themes, from their perspective, was they like how snappy the UI is on Switch and how fast it is to get between apps and opening things up. And
that eShop is already clunky as hell.
It still is, yeah. But like, at least you can open it while you're playing a game, which you didn't used to be able to do, right? Like, you used to have to close down your game, then open the eShop as a separate thing. And I appreciate that that's like a lot more streamlined and all that stuff. But when I load up my 3DS and take a look, and you know, I was looking at the sale recently and checking stuff out, it takes like 5 seconds to like load the theme up, because it's like there's a theme and there's also all the badges.
But it's so pretty.
It looks so nice. I have the little badges from Badge Arcade. I absolutely love that stuff, and the level of customization you had on your 3DS home menu. It's just so good. Like, it's really well done. The folders that you could actually attach badges to folders. Of course, it was once again the thing where you can't actually like write the full thing of the folder on it. Actually, maybe you can write the full thing. I can't remember.
I think you can on Wii U, but you can't on 3DS. It's a single letter representing it. But when you go in it, you can see the full
thing. On 3DS, you can write the full thing, but it was only represented on the folder itself as a letter.
Yes,
unless you decide to put a badge on it instead, which I did because I got like a Game Boy badge for my Game Boy games. GBA for the GBA. Like
when we actually owned games.
Yes, when we bought them.
You can't have a folder with a Game Boy for your Game Boy games on Switch because you're going to play Game Boy games on the Switch online service.
Exactly, in a separate app that is updated on its own, and you have to be connected to the internet, all that good stuff. I feel again. This is similar to like they just added Bluetooth and they added online to Mario Party. In like, it's a thing people have been screaming about for years, and like, Nintendo, please like update your UI. Like, it's like with Mario Maker where they're like, oh, other themes that will come, or other styles, wasn't it? Styles was the word they use, plural styles, and then it ended up just being that one, and they never added to it again. It was just Mario Brothers 2, and that was it. They never changed anything else, and it feels like that, where it's like, themes, and it's like, yes, black and white, great, where are the other themes in this pluralization of this word? And they will eventually get to it, but like in just the lamest fucking way possible, because that's just how they operate when it comes to this stuff. And I think it will be really nice to have folders. Folders for me are just so good because I have so many fucking games, and I don't like the method of like looking through my collection on Switch, because you have to go to the end of the thing, click on all of them. It's nice to see them all in a row, and I like that you can
I've got like 80 icons. It's ridiculous.
It's so many, but I like that you can categorize them by like most time played, which
that's fun.
Again, that's another issue of like time played and how fucked that up is. And you can go through and see all that stuff, but like having the ability to be like, okay, here are my first party Nintendo games, here are third party games, here are my indie stuff, here is like my online multiplayer stuff, like, and just putting stuff into multiple buckets that you can really cleanly organize. It's one of those things that I just love organizing like my digital collections in different ways. This is why we always use websites and stuff to be like, this is what we played this year, and this is like just keeping, I love keeping track of stuff, right? Like it's just a personal thing I'm a big fan of. My entire Steam library is broken up into multiple folders of like like stuff that I have finished, stuff that I want to play, stuff that is new, stuff that I'm currently playing. Like, it's all like neatly organized and categorized, and it just looks nice, and I really like having that level of control over a collection, because when you don't have a physical collection, like, you need the tools in order to like make your digital collection feel like a physical collection, right? Which is why I like websites that let you have all the artwork of the game and stuff on it, because it feels like you own it, you know? Like, it's very hard to feel ownership over digital things because they're on an SD card, right? Like, you don't ever see them. So having that kind of ability to curate for me is really important, and even if folders are compromised, I would rather have compromised folders than nothing at all.
Yeah,
you know.
No, that's fair. That is fair. Yeah, it's one of those things where when I think of Nintendo and the home screen, I think of the 3DS. I don't think of the Switch. Like, it doesn't feel Nintendo. Neither did the Wii in that sense. Like, there's something about the 3DS home screen with, when you've got all your icons, all your folders with their badges on them, it's like, this is Nintendo, this is customizable, this is Japanese, you know, like, this is how loads of other brands operate, like in Japan, and that kind of style, where there is that customizable nature to all these things. And you're right, it's very Nintendo to just stick to red and blue and green, but yeah, that's a better step than nothing.
It's also just shocking from just like a monetary standpoint. Think about how many fucking Switches are out there and how much money they could make from people buying
in a world of microtransactions. This is the perfect example and way they could do it.
And it's like the most inoffensive ones that like people actually would be willing to spend money on as well. You know, like it's wild to me that they don't lean into that more. It's just, it was such a proven success, and maybe there is like hoops they have to jump through and stuff like that, but I mean, there was even third party, like, I have a bunch of themes on 3DS that, like, when I bought Radiant Historia on the eShop when it was like £5, I got a theme that came with that, you know, and you can go to the theme shop there and just get a bunch of third party themes alongside Nintendo's ones. And, you know, there were certain events where they would have themes tied to them and you'd have to like do this thing to get it. And yeah, I just wish there was more of that stuff available. It still feels sterile. You know, the Switch to me has always been a very sterile system. From its just kind of, it's just a front for where you click into your games, and that's it. There's nothing more to it. The eShop is sterile. The home menu is sterile. No bouncing music anymore. It feels removed in a way.
Because we had no 3DS themes. Then we had 3DS themes. And then later than that, on top of that, was Badge Arcade and all the badges. Like, that was like another tier.
There's a separate level to it, yeah.
Several levels are just like, it increased the customizability so much to the degree where, like, I've got like a little Master Sword on a folder and all these. It's like just really nice stuff that like scratches that Smash Brothers itch of being a Nintendo fan and having all these universes link up in a way. Like, it just feels nice as a fan. And yeah. Massive open goal. Massive. But we know what Nintendo feel about open goals.
Fingers crossed, man. Fingers crossed. I'm predicting it, so we'll see.
Yeah.
See how it
anyway, goes. You mentioned microtransactions. I've got a prediction that links to microtransactions.
All right, here we go.
2022 is sequel time for Ring Fit Adventure.
All right.
So it's going to be announced in spring, and it's going to come out in autumn. And it's going to have a strengthened ring con, because some people were saying the ring con, after a lot of use, it became a bit more elasticated, a bit worn out. So this new one's going to not wear out in the same way.
Okay.
And obviously this doesn't involve anything related to the chip shortage. This is like separate technology, you would hope. And, you know, at this point in time, well, as of September 2021, the first Ring Fit sold 12.2 million copies, which
is it in the top 10 or is it just outside?
It's number 10 at 12.2
million. It is number
10,
yeah.
Yeah. So I think the new feature to Ring Fit 2 will be increased online interactivity. So we're talking like competition boards, all these things. And there's going to be exclusive competitions for Nintendo Online subscribers to play online together. Like, this is another way of driving these online things. So when you're playing as your avatar in an online space against other people, you're going to want customizable avatars. So Nintendo are going to take a big step in terms of microtransactions. And it's going to be the whole Fortnite shop of customize this with that. You can have the Mario hat. You can have the Wario hat. You can have the Yoshi hat. You can have the Master Sword on your character. Like, they are going to go crazy for microtransactions. And it's all going to drive their online subscribers and sell Ring Fit Adventure 2 or whatever they decide to call it. And it's going to be a money spinner. And it's going to be a bit of a shame because I think the first Ring Fit was just such a breath of fresh air that
right.
this is going to feel very much like Nintendo driving it into the ground a little bit and trying to make some money out of it. But it'll still be a very good game. There'll be like a new campaign in there, and it's going to have all these online competitions and things. And
so, do you think they'll have like a social space almost where people can like hang out and show off that stuff? You know, like where people, like a gym almost. Everyone goes to the gym and...
Yes, yeah. And like daily and weekly competitions, exactly, that are, you know, running on the spot, doing push-ups, doing all these things. And they're going to gamify that in some way. And you are going to want to look as fly as possible when you are, you know, doing push-ups against your pal on the other side of the world. You want to show off that Yoshi hat. So
yeah, Ring Fit, I guess the main character does have a style to them. I would say Ring Fit has a bit more of an aesthetic identity to it than other like Wii Sports style games. Like, I think because the Mii was so prevalent in that era, there was almost a remove of like actual character to it. Whereas I think the main character, like they have like their hair goes on fire and stuff like that, right? Like there is a kind of, and also it's in the Breath of the Wild engine, Ring Fit Adventure as well, which is another interesting element to it. And I think that can work, probably not as well as if it was more of a blank slate avatar, but maybe they introduce the new character who is more of a blank slate avatar, more like a Wii Fit trainer or something, right, where you can get a lot more out of it by customizing them and making them look however you want to look, which I think is cool. I think that's it's a smart twist on what Ring Fit is. Like, now that you've conquered fitness for yourself, now you must conquer everyone else in fitness, right? By going online and competing in competitions and you know, racing and all those different types of things. I wonder if there's, like, an additional thing they add to the RingCon, like a new feature.
I was thinking that, and I don't think they'll want to divide their market with owners, the 12 million current owners of the first game with their current equipment. So
yeah,
we'll see.
I don't believe you can actually download Ring Fit Adventure from the eShop. I think you have to buy it physically because it only is cartridge.
Wow, okay.
It's only cartridge based, and because it comes with it when you buy the RingCon. So,
and they'll have to change that for this because they want people who already own the kit to buy just the game. So
exactly, yeah, you should be able to have backwards compatibility. Although I wouldn't put it above Nintendo to be like, no, you need the new RingCon for the new game because it has this one thing that you can't do otherwise.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be surprised, but yeah, that's good. I do like the idea of Ring Fit Adventure. I think it's down to like 55 quid or something at the moment. And when I bought my Oculus, I got a 50 quid Amazon voucher. So I've been thinking, maybe I'll just get
Ring Fit. My concern is playing it in a flat.
Yeah, having the space for it is the tough thing for me, especially with my setup. My Switch is like in front of my monitor that's on a desk, and I don't have that much space behind me with my bed. Like it doesn't work with my current living situation, which is why I've held off on it for so long, because otherwise if I did have an easy way to play it, I probably would have got it by this point, because I think it's a really good way of exercising indoors. That said, with VR I kind of have that almost with just playing Beat Saber at this point in time, so not the same, of course, but definitely helps to do a bit of indoor activity.
Yes,
for sure. So
yeah,
very good. All right, Bally, this one's for you. My number four prediction. F-Zero will get its redemption. It's happening, baby. In the month that F-Zero X is planned to launch on Nintendo Switch Online for N64, Nintendo will announce in a direct that F-Zero GX is coming back. It's getting a remaster, and it will be titled F-Zero GX Extreme, with just starting with the letter X. Extreme.
FX is in there.
Yes. F-Zero GX Extreme is what it's going to be called. As similar to what happened with Advance Wars, where they've found a Western studio with Way Forward to make it, they have the perfect indie studio to remaster an F-Zero game. And that is, of course, Shinan. Shinan, who made the Fast RMX, the Fast Racing Neo, those games, very much like F-Zero games in their own right, at least their kind of homage to F-Zero. And this will be their test to see if they can then make a full-blown F-Zero game. But I think you have to test the waters, right? Like, Advance Wars is coming back. That's great. Everyone's excited. But it's a remake of 1 and 2. So, like, temper those expectations. Like, if this does well, maybe we'll bring it back. And I think it's a good model for Nintendo to do, to go to a Western studio, because they have no one internally who has any interest in working on this IP anymore. They've got to find someone else to work on it. And I think finding a studio who already like, has been on Nintendo systems. They have a track record of working directly with Nintendo from the Wii U days. Like, I think that's an important thing to note, is, like, what are the relationships with studios that Nintendo have from a while back with smaller studios that have supported their systems in the past? And Shinen are, like, a perfect example of that, because they're making the game that Nintendo won't make. And they understand it. They've made this type of game before, and remastering is a good way of, like, stepping up to the plate, right? Like, it feels like it's giving them the challenge to then they can undertake a much more difficult thing, right? I kind of think of it in the same way as, I think it's Aspyr is the studio who's remaking Knights of the Old Republic, where they made a bunch of ports for Star Wars games to other consoles, but this Knights of the Old Republic thing, this is a big step up for them. This is going to be a full-blown remake, and I think for Shinen to step up, this is going to be the first thing that they have to do, is remake F-Zero GX to modern standards. Give it online support, give it all that stuff.
I like that.
Make it work. Yeah.
Great. No, it's cool. I think that's a great way to test the waters off F-Zero and potentially relaunch it, a bit like you're saying with Advance Wars. I think they are both very much, in terms of sales, kind of B to C tier when it comes to Nintendo games.
Yes.
And you, when you have a big success like the Switch, there's obviously potential for those types of games to do well, but you got to test the water. And I think Reboot Camp is just the perfect way of, as you say, testing their IP without using up internal studios. And I think F-Zero is a great candidate to do a similar thing with. And yeah, Shinden, you know, I really enjoyed Fast Racing Neo. I think the original one was on Wii.
Yeah, Fast RMX. There was Fast Racing on Wii. On WiiWare, I believe, is a WiiWare game, the original, and then there was a Wii U game that then got ported to Switch, which is Fast RMX.
Right, So I really enjoyed that Wii U game. It feels a lot more like Wipeout than F-Zero, but I don't think that would stop them from doing something F-Zero related.
It's in the same ballpark, right? So,
Totally. So I love that idea, and I really hope it happens. Bold, but I like it.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, I think the other part of it is, like, what studio would say no to using a Nintendo IP, right? Like, if Nintendo approach you and say, hey, you can make a game in one of our franchises, like, who's going to say no to that?
And even if your prediction doesn't happen, I think there's a decent chance this year something like the Advance Wars Way Forward thing happens, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that, I think, for some, maybe for Kid Icarus, some other random IP, that's been on the back burner. Like, they will want to get as much of their IP out on Switch in that console lifecycle as they can within reason. So you're right.
Yeah, especially just because everything does better on Switch. That's the effect. The Switch effect is, no matter what franchise you are, if you're an old forgotten franchise, you will have the best-selling title in your series on Switch.
And you'll have the rocket boosters you need to, you know, a bit like we've talked about how Fire Emblem Awakening was like the last game / first game of the Fire Emblem series. It's like that could happen to some other franchise on Switch. We just don't know it yet, you know, and they're not going to find out until they try.
Totally. Yeah. So I think it is in Nintendo's interest to go to these dormant franchises and be like, all right, let's give you a go. The circumstances are right. It makes sense. Let's throw it out there and see how it does. So I really do hope, if just for your sake, Bally, to be happy to have F-Zero to come back.
Well, we've got Advance Wars, and we've got WarioWare. We've got all these games I like. Yeah. It's like, right, F-Zero is like one of the last remaining ones.
It's the last
Pilot Wings would be good.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I'm looking forward to playing F-Zero X on Switch Online when that comes out.
For sure.
That'll be great fun. And that'll have online play as well, so we can play online F-Zero. Pretty good. Pretty good. First time an F-Zero game will be online officially. That's so weird. Than an N64 game. Oh, my God. Okay. Oh, Nintendo. Bally, what's your number four prediction?
All right, my final pseudo-legit prediction. The Mario film is coming out in 2022.
It is, yes. It,
shockingly. I think this game's going to be a roaring success. I think
this
it's going to be...
You mean?
Pardon?
This film. You said this game. It's going to be game. A roaring
success. This film will be a roaring success. And it's going to be a fun romp. I think it's going to be akin to Sonic in terms of that level of success. And it'll be weird, but ultimately it'll do what Nintendo wants it to do. And that's just, like, you know, promote its characters, appeal to a family audience. And sure, there's going to be some grumpy fans out there. But ultimately, the film is going to have a post-credit scene. And in the post-credit scene, it's going to feature Wario and Waluigi, because they are going to be the antagonists for the follow-up film, which will come out in 2024. Now, I should also say that there's going to be the DK film, which has been rumored slash confirmed.
Right, and yeah.
That's going to be in 2023. So this is the start of the pseudo Mario cinematic universe. So we got 2022 for Mario film, 23 for the DK film, and 24 for the follow-up to the Mario film, complete with Wario and Waluigi. Now, Wario and Waluigi will be played by... So Wario was going to be played by John Goodman. Do you know John Goodman?
I think so. He's the guy who was in like the Borrowers film, right?
Yeah. So he plays like the voice of Sully in Monsters, Inc. He's also done like voice acting before. And I think Waluigi is going to be played by Tom Hanks.
That's a nightmare. Yeah. Why would you do that to Tom Hanks? He's a treasure. He's a world treasure.
He's getting old. He needs a bit of money. He's on the twilight of his career. And,
oh my God.
You know, Waluigi is a top tier character in cinema. So
that is a literal nightmare. You've created a literal nightmare.
Exactly. So I really think there'll be a sequel. I think it will be teased with the end credits, a bit like stuff was with Sonic. If you don't want to spoil that, whatever, I won't spoil it. But I don't even see that film and I know what's in it. But anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I think Mario's going to be the same. And even if it's not those two actors, I think they will drop some big actors and they probably will play Wario and Waluigi. Or maybe even like a Yoshi, because we've not had Yoshi confirmed. But who knows?
Now, to add to this, do you think that like come 2026, Nintendo and Sega are going to work together to mash the Sonic and Mario universes into a crossover film? Are we going to get Alien versus Predator for Sonic versus Mario? Is that going to happen?
I actually think there's maybe even a stronger chance of Nintendo doing a film outside the Mushroom Kingdom that then links back to Mario. And we Smash Brothers it up a bit in here before we bring in Sonic. You know, Sonic only came in like, what, Brawl, right? So, like,
yeah,
Nintendo spread the love within their IP before they expanded their own game cinematic universe, I guess, out
True.
To Sonic. So,
I'm thinking along the lines of there's already a Sonic film and a sequel coming out, right? Like, it's an established thing that already exists. And I don't know enough about studios and, like, film studios and how that would work, because I don't know who's making the Sonic film versus it's Illumination, who's making the Mario animated one. And the Sonic one is this mix of live action and animation, whereas the Mario one is just a pure animated film. So it would be a little weird probably to do it, but I do think that, like, if you know, crossovers are the hottest thing in the world, you know, why is the MCU so big? Because it's one massive crossover, right? Like, I think that it's definitely feasible, even if it's like 2030 that it happens. I think that there's a way in which we get a Sonic and Mario together,
and
maybe.
I think anyone who's making any films, whether it's Star Wars or Sonic or Mario or any other IP, their dream right now is to create something that can be anywhere near the level of success as MCU. And MCU takes good writing, good characters, good worlds, good link-ups, and, you know, appeals to a family audience, and, you know, interesting ideas that you can churn out film after film year on year on year. And I do think Nintendo and video games more widely, if they do want to include Sonic in that, have that ability to appeal to that family audience. And you know, there will be something like the MCU in the next 15 years. It might not be anywhere near as big, and it might not be video game characters, it might be something else, but something like that is going to happen because that's where the money is, and that's where, you know, Hollywood's going to want to go. So why not Mario? Why not Nintendo? You know, they might give it a bash.
I would love to see other IP you know, just put in the video game space from Nintendo. But I think, I don't know, it's one of those things where I probably am not actually that interested in the movies themselves. I'm more interested in the cultural reaction to the movies. I'm more interested
in the whole thing could be fun together.
I am one of those people who would rather be on Twitter looking at people's reactions to the Sonic movie than watching the Sonic movie myself. You know, like, I think that for me, the cultural object of the Sonic movie is more important than the actual movie itself. So,
right. I think it's on Netflix in the UK. I might actually just watch it.
I was considering watching over Christmas. Didn't get a chance to, but it's definitely...
I cannot persuade Caroline to watch that film with me, so...
Go on. Give it a try.
But oh well.
Oh boy. Cool. Well, we're coming to our last predictions here, our final ones, which usually a bit crazier. I'm looking at mine. I don't think it's that crazy, but it's a little weird. It's not that weird. All right, mine's not that crazy.
Okay.
But let's just go for it. So, Nintendo, in their infinite wisdom, adding features to games late, as we have talked about multiple times on this episode already, will attempt to reboot ARMS. However, they will not release ARMS 2. But instead will announce a new single-player campaign for the original game that will be akin to the update they gave Animal Crossing New Leaf, and it will be just called ARMS 2.0. And they will add extra characters that they originally intended to that they never did because the game wasn't successful enough. But to add to this, they will add other Nintendo characters to ARMS to try and give it a shot in the arm, if you will. Mario and Link will be featured. They'll have weird ribbon arms and it will look like Nightmare Escape. But they will be added to the game as characters, and it will be a disaster. I'm thinking about like how much Nintendo tried to push ARMS. They have multiple weekends of like, guys, ARMS is free for this week. Like, come on. It's free, guys. Like, just check it out, you know? Like, it's pretty cool. People like it quite a lot. And I think, like, adding a campaign to ARMS, because I think so many people were like, oh, this could be like Nintendo's Overwatch, but then they didn't really capitalize on it in a cool way. Like, the characters are so cool, and they could have, like, a great story built around them, but they just didn't do it in a way that made sense. And I think, like, having a kind of like narrative driven ARMS campaign would be a lot of fun. Of course, Nintendo probably wouldn't be able to make something that's that competent in that arena.
I do think Nintendo want like another big hitter to add to their repertoire that is in the multiplayer online space. Like, I think they don't feel like Splatoon, Smash Brothers, and Mario Kart is probably enough. Animal Crossing in there as well, I guess, but I think they want a fifth game that is a bit more, like you say, potentially Overwatch style or something. And that's a bit also why I suggested Ring Fit 2 might have an online aspect as well. I think they just want to try and drive those subscriptions with online Nintendo Switch Online, you know. And yeah, ARMS is one way they, I guess, they can see that potentially happening. And as you say, ARMS is free this weekend, guys. Go try it out. And it doesn't seem to have worked.
Nintendo loves ARMS. They just love it. They're like, come on, this is the best game we've made. Oh, yeah. Come on, guys.
And I think it is a fantastic world. And a single player and campaign in ARMS would really appeal to me because I wasn't that keen on the actual physics and gameplay of the multiplayer, but I loved the world and the music and the characters. Like, it is just wild and fresh.
It's like
Nintendo.
Top five main themes of a game is the ARMS main theme. It's so fucking good. It's just amazing.
It's really good. And yeah, I'd like to see that go somewhere because it's not really going anywhere at the moment.
How likely do you think an ARMS universe game, another ARMS universe game happens? Like, if it's a sequel or if it's like a spin-off or something? Because I mean, the Mario Kart team made ARMS, right? So
yeah, I think if you in hindsight said, okay, the Mario Kart team worked on a game and it pseudo bombed, well, bombed in terms of what the Mario Kart team could potentially be working on,
right?
I think they'll be really frustrated with how ARMS has turned out. And I think when you've got a team like the Mario Kart team who have made, obviously made some fantastic Mario Kart games, especially 8 and 8 Deluxe, I think Nintendo are now saying, right, Mario Kart team, time to work on something else. Not necessarily Mario Kart, but like, it's time to move away from ARMS. And if we want to do something with ARMS, why don't we offload that to some other, either internal or external studio and do something different with ARMS? Because the world is great, the characters are great, but whatever the gameplay is, we just need to rethink what we're doing with it.
Yeah. It's a tricky franchise because I think fundamentally it's built around stuff that Nintendo were hedging their bets on, right? When you think about the launch of the Switch and they had traditional games with Zelda, but they also had 1-2 Switch, which was like, yeah, maybe people still like the Wii. And then they had ARMS and they're like, yeah, people.
1-2 Switch and ARMS were incredibly Wii, you're right.
They were very motion control focused, right? Yeah. So because of that and the way the Switch has turned out where most people just treat it like a traditional games console and they play it in bed or...
Apart from Ring Fit Adventure, which is kind of a shocking outlier in that sense, but yeah.
Right, which also, like, part of Ring Fit's success, I think, similar to Animal Crossing, is the pandemic-like effect on it, which I think there was a part of 2020 when it was sold out everywhere because people were in their homes wanting a fitness thing to do, and it did very well as a result of that. But not to say it wouldn't have done well otherwise, but yeah, it's... it is interesting that that's the success they have and you know, in that market. But, you know, the motion control stuff, it just doesn't seem like it's working out for them in that way. And if you are to go at arms again, maybe you just find a better, more cohesive control scheme for the way that it works. Because it does have controller support. You can just play it regularly with buttons, because with the Switch, you had to play things handheld. So they had to have a way of doing it with shoulder buttons. It just didn't feel quite as good or as precise, or the whole game was really built around motion control. So when they tried to like add some button controls to it, it didn't really go the way that they wanted it, I guess. So I think they'd have to probably rethink it a bit and come back to the table. But I'm gonna say an update as opposed to a sequel, because I just don't think they have enough resources to put it into one. So yeah, there you go. That's my final prediction.
I like it.
Not as out there, but yeah, you know, I thought I should rep arms in some way.
My final prediction is Nintendo keep trucking along with mobile games, and it is Zelda's turn. We know Zelda games being worked on, don't we? We just don't know what it is, right?
I think they said something about that, but it's been a long time, and I'm not sure if that's really true anymore. But
they're going to do the simple thing. They're going to make a Zelda Niantic game. That game is going to be called Zelda Kingdoms.
Okay.
And your job as a warrior within the Zelda world universe, within Hyrule, is to clear the blight from your local area. You are going to go on quests. You're going to gain rupees. You're going to use those rupees to buy weapons to help you clear more blight from your local area. You can even program in your bike to ride around your area, and it will act as a pony to ride to new locations and ultimately to save Hyrule. Zelda Kingdoms, coming 2022.
Amazing. That's great. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like, I would love if there was a crossover between this and Pikmin Bloom, where, like, you get rid of the blight, and then you have to get flowers around that area as well, and you get a bonus for playing both games.
No. All this time, Pikmin Bloom has been creating blight across the world, and in the Zelda Kingdoms game, you're actually getting rid of the flowers, but in the Zelda game, they're blight, and in the Pikmin game, it's like, there's some evil doer... There's some evil being getting rid of our flowers, so the two games actually subconsciously cross over without you ever really knowing.
That's hilarious. Yeah, well, the Pikmin Bloom players are just like, la 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 la. The Zelda players are like, why are there so much on this map? Everything is dying.
Why everyone?
It keeps coming back. Who knows why? That'd be an amazing, like, if they just didn't tell anyone about that, but that's how it works. That'd be incredible.
You could probably work it out pretty quick, but yeah, that would be funny.
That'd be amazing. Yeah, I think it's really weird with what Nintendo have been doing on mobile. I think part of it is they started their kind of jump into that market because they were tanking real bad, right? Wii U was doing bad. 3DS wasn't doing amazing. They needed something, a shot in the arm. And then Switch happened, and they're like, we probably don't need that anymore. We're cool over here. So I just feel like their attempts to do mobile stuff this more probably makes more sense to be of the Pikmin Bloom variety, right? Just working with Niantic on something that's more similar to that, because that has the potential to blow up. It's not like imposing on their IP as like actual games. It's not like Mario Run, where it's like a worse version of a Mario game. It's something totally different that still like expands brand awareness. I think that's probably what Nintendo continue to want to have on mobile, is just to spread brand awareness, right? Like, so that people eventually go to their theme park and eventually buy their games and eventually do all this other stuff, merchandising opportunities,
watch their
all
films.
That stuff. Watch their films, exactly, right. It just acts as another conduit to create new Nintendo fans from a young age. And I think that works. That makes sense. I don't know what they would do next with mobile that's in a traditional sense. Like, it feels like they've kind of run the whole gamut at this point. The Mario Kart game came out, and I guess some people like it, but it seems like, for the most part, it's just not very good and has a bunch of microtransactions that people don't like. Fire Emblem continues to be their big moneymaker still to this day. Just so many waifus. Everyone loves them. There's, you know, Mario Run just flopped. It was a totally different approach. They shut down Dr. Mario, you know? Like, they've just had a lot of approaches and a lot of attempts. And I think they're kind of at the point where they're like, we haven't really cracked this market, but, like, do we need to at this point? It's a nice thing, I think, to keep in the back of their pocket in case they go through another bad situation. But I think that they really are. They're kind of done with experimenting on mobile now.
They're not used to being in a market without dominating the market, you know?
It's true, yes.
It's very weird for them, for sure.
Yeah. probably takes them down a peg, you know.
Yeah.
They don't like it. They want to be the kings.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Cool. There you go. Those are our predictions for the year. I feel like I've been a bit cynical, but you know what? Nintendo, make me a cynic.
That's not your fault. That's their fault.
I don't know. I do like talking about Nintendo this way because there are like business patterns that you can follow of like just weird decisions that they make and stuff that's like, okay, they'll give you something, but it will always be compromised in some fucked up way that you never imagined. And I think all my predictions have to have that weird compromised element to them in some fucked up way that I enjoy. And you know, I'm sure it's going to be a good year. You know, overall, Bally, how are you feeling about 2022? Do you think we'll get some big games? We haven't really talked about the big games. What are your thoughts on Breath of the Wild 2, Bayonetta 3, Splatoon coming out, potential new Mario game? What do you think is going to come out? What's going to happen?
I think everything that's announced will come out this year apart from Breath of the Wild 2. I think the others, you got a pretty good bet of coming out. I don't think we'll get a new Mario this year. Who knows? We are definitely due a new Mario.
Absolutely,
But maybe that could be the game that gets announced spring, comes out autumn. That would be awesome. I do think Splatoon 3 will come out. I think games like Kirby, The Forgotten Land.
Yeah, Kirby coming. Yeah.
That'll be good, hopefully. Bayonetta 3, I think, will come out this year. I think they'll have generally a strong year. But for us, again, on the show, I think that'll be boosted massively by just what indies come to Switch, and probably most of them, and that'll probably still be some of our highlights of the year. But you never know, there could be other Nintendo games that come that will blow us away. I mean, we didn't know Metroid Dread was coming last year, and
no,
it was one of our favorite games of the year. So, you know,
absolutely,
Nintendo always have that up their sleeve. So who knows? I think it'll be good. Last year was pretty good. Year before that was also decent. So they've had a few decent to strong years, whereas 2017 was just a gangbuster year. So maybe we're due a gangbuster year, but I feel like truly that can only happen when Breath of the Wild 2 comes out. And I think that's coming out next year, so we'll see.
Yeah. If it does come out, then, you know, a lot of people are saying, look, man, all the pieces are in place to do 2017 Part 2 here, right? They've got a Mario plus Rabbids game. They've got a Splatoon game coming out. There's potentially Zelda, potentially Mario, right? There's a Platinum exclusive game, which I guess Astral Chain came out the year after.
Oh,
but still,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
There are a lot of similarities to that first year of Switch that could be repeated.
Yeah,
and
I think it's hopefully also demonstrating, and COVID makes this more complicated, but video game, you know, development cycles are getting longer, even especially at that top end. And these are the very top end games we're talking about. So that can also just play into these games taking a damn long time to come out.
They do, yeah, for sure. Like 6 years is, I think between Skyward Sword and Breath of the Wild was 6 years, 2011 to 2017, and we're coming up on that now, right? Like if it comes out in 2023, that's another 6 years, and that's with an iterative game, right? That's with a game still built on the bones of the last one.
Mm.
Granted, a lot more ambitious, but still, very, very long time takes to make these big games, and we just have to get used to it, I guess, because you know, it's hard. It's hard out there making video games.
Takes
time. Cool. Well, that's going to wrap us up for the first show of 2022. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks for coming along with the ride. And hopefully you enjoyed our celebrations of Game of the Year stuff that we did. We put out a lot of stuff. Both Bally and I put out our top 10 games of the year, our personal lists, both on the podcast feed, but also on YouTube. And you can find Bally's on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/thisnintendolife, and mine is on my YouTube channel. If you just search NBZ on YouTube, you'll find mine there as well. And it was good fun putting those together. Always takes a lot of time, more time than you always expect when it comes
to so much
to
time.
I
make one video a year, but I like to try and make it as good as possible.
Yeah,
and, yeah,
exactly.
I was reminded just how long video production takes.
It really puts into harsh perspective the people who make like 2 hour long documentaries on YouTube.
Podcasting is easy peasy in comparison. Easy peasy.
Way easier, yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, it's good fun. So if you want to check those out, they're there. You can download them. You can watch them. However you want to take a look at our lists. We have so many lists. Too many lists, you might say. But yeah, it was good fun putting all that stuff together. Obviously, you can find us all over the internet in various places, such as twitter.com, which I continue to think is a good idea to use every day against everyone's better judgment and my own. You can find me at LordNBZ. Bally, where can they find you?
I'm on Twitter at Ballyman91. That's BALLYMAN91.
Lovely, lovely. You can find the show Twitter at TNL Podcast, and that has links to our Discord and our YouTube channel. And yeah, you can tweet us and ask us questions, and sometimes we put out polls. It always keeps you up to date on all the things we're doing, including those Game of the Year lists, those videos that we put out as well. Yeah, you can obviously find the show in various different places. I want to give a shout out here to Spotify, because you can now review on Spotify. Now, we've always been pushing reviews on Apple Podcasts, which is a big thing, still important. However, Spotify growing as a podcast platform, we grew a lot on Spotify in 2021 in terms of listenership, and it seems like a good place for people to find podcasts now. So if you're a Spotify listener, or even if you're not, and you have a Spotify account, please head over to our Spotify page. You can just search This Nintendo Life on Spotify. It should come up under the podcast tab, and give us a rating. I think it's only a star rating. I don't think you can write reviews on Spotify at the moment, but if you go there, click on the star rating, give us 5 stars, and that'd just be very nice. That'd be great. It just means more people get visibility on the show on Spotify. So that would be really, really good if people can go out there and do that. But of course, you can find the show in various places, such as regular podcatching apps, all that fun stuff. Subscribe to us on there and find us. You can also, of course, support the show if you would like to help us out here in our little corner of the internet. If you head over to Patreon, patreon.com/thisnintendolife, where you can get bonus episodes and other fun stuff. Bally, we have some people we'd like to thank for supporting the show.
Yes, we would like to thank our $10 tier patrons. They are Zach S, Atari Alex, Thomas, Matthew, and my wife Caroline. Thank you all for your $10 tier support. And as MBZ said, in December we put out a ton of content, and that included our top 10 non-Tendo games of the year. And you can listen to This Non-Tendo Life, all those episodes, over there on Patreon for a single dollar. Go check that out. It's definitely something worth doing.
Absolutely, yeah, it's good fun. We have fun doing it, just like doing this show right here, right now. And yeah, I think that pretty much does it. Obviously, we didn't do any emails this show, and that's obviously a big part of the show. And we're getting a little bit low in the bucket. We had quite a few last year, and everyone was sending them in, and that was nice. But let's get some fresh hot takes. Let's get some your 2022 boiling thoughts about Nintendo and the year and all that stuff. So if you have an email, a question you would like to ask us, you can send it to our email address, which Bally will tell you right now.
Email address is thisnintendolife@gmail.com. That is thisnintendolife@gmail.com.
Yeah, send in all your stuff. We will read all of them, and yeah, we'll get them read out on the show if we want to answer your question. So yeah, go for that. That'd be great. We appreciate it greatly that you interact. It's always a good part of doing this. So that is gonna close us out for the first show of the year. Bally, any thoughts, any plans on you know, what you're playing, any things, lists to be sorting out?
It's just a weird but also nice feeling when you've played all those games for the previous year, done Game of the Year list and everything, and you then have a clean slate going into the new year, fresh, and I've got my document lined up. It's got lots of release dates for games I'm interested in playing, and you know, the whole process, it all just starts again, and it feels good.
Yeah, it feels good. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to the rest of this year and all the fun stuff that happens. But until next time, thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back very soon with another episode. Until then, we'll see you next time. Bye-bye, folks. The musical interlude used on today's show was Grease Part 1 from Grease, copyright Nomada Studio 2018.